Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, we welcome Johan Ferreira to the show. Johan is the owner and president of Intercape, the largest intercity passenger transport service in Southern Africa. Johan, I am so excited to have you on the show today. And you are all the way from Cape Town, South Africa, right?
That's right, Lisa.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. We've got a lot of things that I want to talk about today. Let's just jump right in. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your growing up, if you would.
Right. So I was born in 1976, on the 23rd of February, in a city called Windhoek, which at the time was part of Southwest Africa, that was part of South Africa, the Republic of South Africa. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that was my birth city. I grew up in Windhoek, and my father was a school teacher, and my mother was a homemaker. I've got a sister, which is 4 years older than me. And in 1971, on the 28th of August, my father bought a bus, and then he started to work with this bus, picking up school children from the farm outside of Windhoek, bring them into town, and then go into school, go do his teaching, mm-hmm. and then in the afternoon would take the bus and take the children back to the farms again, and then during the course of the afternoon do some extra work with the bus. And my mother would do the markings of the books, you know, the school children book, because he couldn't, you know, get to that as well.
Right.
And then by 6, 7 in the afternoon or even later sometimes, you know, he would come home with the bus. And my sister and I were to wash the bus. So I was too small to handle a broom. Uh-huh. So my job was to take the house pipe and then hose the bus down. And my sister would take the broom and she would wash the bus. And that's how, you know, that was my first memories of growing up in Windhoek.
Right. And so that was kind of the beginnings of the business that you run today. Although it's evolved over the years, your dad was very entrepreneurial as well, wasn't he? So then talk about then you moved and talk about that a little bit and right. Talk about the beginnings of the bus business, which is now called Intercape.
That's correct.
After so many years, but you're second generation. Now, you know, are you still washing the buses?
If the staff makes me mad enough, then I'll go in the wash bin. That's therapeutic for me. Then I go and wash a bus and it just calms me down and brings me back to, yeah, it grounds me again, you know?
Yes, right. Well, I love that your dad got you guys involved even at a very early age.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So talk a little bit about when you guys moved and talk about the evolution, I guess, of the business.
Right. So he bought the first bus in 71, continued teaching. 75, he was still, a teacher, but then he had already five buses at the time. And then he suffered a heart attack. I was 8 years old. And then he resigned from his teaching profession and carried on with the buses. And in 1979, he was asked to take over the shuttle service from South African Airways, which used to shuttle the passengers between the cities and the airports in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So then he agreed that he will take over the shuttle service in Namibia, Southwest Africa, between the airport and the city, Windhoek, and then also in Cape Town. And that's where the name Intercape comes from. It's Cape Town and inter between.
Oh, awesome.
Or, you know, the meaning of inter is like between.
Right.
And so it was between the airport and the city. So then we moved, my sister then went into varsity in Stellenbosch. She finished high school in Namibia at the time in 1980. And we moved to Cape Town to be closer to my sister, but also to start this new shuttle service.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my beginning of my high school career in South Africa. And then a year later, in 1981, I met my late wife.
Anne Marie.
Yes. Yeah. When she walked into the door, I immediately knew that she's going to be my wife.
You knew she was the one.
Yeah.
Wow.
So within 6 months into our time together in the grave, then we became girlfriend, boyfriend. And as I say, the rest is history. So I matriculated in 85, and then I had to go to the army. It was compulsory at the time. South Africa was at war with Angola. The Cubans were in there, the Russians were in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a war that started out in the late 60s, early 70s, and it continued right through to 86, 87. So I had to go to the army and serve. And it's also at the time when my late father applied for a permit to start to operate an intercity service between Cape Town and Port Elizabeth and various other cities. That was the start of the intercity operations, the same as Greyhound in the States, transporting passengers by road between the cities in South Africa, towns and cities, and also interprovincial. He then got granted a permit, one of a few permits that he applied for, and that's between Cape Town and Port Elizabeth, which is like 850 kilometers down the coast. He got granted the permit, and just before we started the service, he was actually doing the promotions. He then fell ill. He had a thrombosis in the eye, and he couldn't continue. So I had special permission to leave service and go and help. That's when, you know, we started out the business.
Okay.
So I was driving the bus and he was driving the bus, and my late wife, she was at varsity, and if she were to see me, she would put on a uniform and play hostess on the bus. So
okay.
She'd serve the coffee and I drove the bus. And so we developed this business out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There was no intercity service,
mm-hmm.
No cell phones, no computers. So we worked with a telex machine and a telephone and a book, where we used to write up the names of the passengers, would call in by telephone and book a seat, and they would pay
goodness.
On the bus.
Wow.
And then we'd use a telex machine to send the message through to Port Elizabeth and say, right, these are the names that's going to carry on, you know, come onto the bus the next day.
Sure.
That's how the business started.
That is an amazing story. Amazing story. But your dad just kept taking steps, right? And sometimes, you know, I talk to entrepreneurs all the time. That is how it starts. You see a need, and there was no service, right? And so he took advantage of that gap there, I guess, if you will.
I think also the lesson for me, Lisa, is don't despise small beginnings, you know. We
yes.
had no money. So he bought buses for 1,000 rand apiece, which was old scrap buses from South African Airways that dated from the 60s. And we refurbished and rebuilt, restored those buses. And then those are the buses that we started out the services.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposition, which was the state, they had brand new buses. So we had these old buses. But we had the heart, and there was a calling and a blessing. And we've built this business against all odds. When you're in the profession of the state, when you're employed by the state, you cannot have a second job. You can't have a farm and be a school teacher or work in government or parastatal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he did it undercover. So he had half a bus. So the owner was the Ford dealership.
Okay.
But he did the work with the bus.
Mm-hmm. So the business looks a lot different today. Do you want to talk about the evolution and how you've evolved the business? Because
yeah.
now it's much different, right?
I think the main difference, of course, it's bigger. We're the largest operator in Southern Africa. We operate in 7 countries, South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique, and Malawi. But I think the thing here is, Lisa, for me, is that we bring the word of God to all the passengers. That for me is, you know, it's like Moses. God put a stick in his hand, but it was God's stick in Moses' hand.
Mm-hmm.
So this is God's company. It's in my hand. I'm the steward of that company. So it's
mm-hmm.
not my company. It wasn't Moses' stick.
Right.
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 It was God's stick.
Yes.
Because through that stick,
yes.
God led his people out of Egypt. So this company is just a stick. So we bring the Word of God to all the passengers, on the coaches, through the audiovisual equipment, on the coaches. So it's all faith-based, mm-hmm. carries the good news of Jesus. And we bring that to 1.78 million people. Now that, just in terms of church, is a big church.
Yes, it is.
It's a huge church and a huge responsibility mm-hmm. that you carry.
What a blessing for you and your company to be able to use what God has given you and use it for kingdom purposes and feed people's souls. You're feeding people's souls. No. So it asked you about the content. You said you get the content from all
yes.
places.
Yes.
Some of it, you, the curriculum or the content you guys are writing.
Yes. Yeah.
But then you're using from trusted sources yeah. out yeah. there as well.
Yeah. 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 A lot of stuff comes from America, Christian content, Flywheel and, you know, Fireproof and all these beautiful Christian faith-based
films,
movies that,
right.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
that got made over the
yes.
years. So we've seen high quality movies coming out of Americas. So we use that and also local content, which then speaks to the local people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen and we've had so many testimonies of people that when people come to either a plane or a train or a bus, they're either happy because they're going somewhere and they're looking forward, or they're leaving and they're sad. People with huge emotions coming
That's
to
right.
And sometimes
coming from
people
difficult
come
situations, going to difficult situations sometimes.
Yeah, and they have suicidal thoughts and they come to the bus and then they want to take their life. You know, they're in that process and they would sit under the Word and literally their lives get, you know, impacted,
right.
changed and saved.
Right.
So we have
hope.
Many of these testimonies of people mm-hmm. that got saved.
Do you get those testimonies?
Yes, yes, yeah,
do people
yeah.
like email you
yes,
and
yes,
say,
yes.
I just want you to know? That is so incredible. I'm so proud of you. I'm
Look,
so proud
I
of you.
I think in the beginning, it was difficult for the public at large to understand what this was about. Yeah, I was at one point confronted and interviewed by the press, and the press asked me, you know,
yes.
why do you do this? Why this arrogance? Why do you subject passengers to Christian content for 24 hours or 36 hours or 18 hours at a time? Is this not right? And I looked at the guy and I said to him, you know, very much like when Job started to question God. And God said to him, where were you when I laid the foundations of this world, of this earth? And I looked at the guy and I said, where were you where this company was founded? How you don't know my story.
Right.
You don't know where this company comes
right.
from. It is not of your making that I sit here today. It is the making of my Father. And
mm-hmm.
I will give honor where honor is due.
Mm-hmm.
And the Word says, if you deny me before man, I will deny you before the Father. And I cannot deny my Father.
But, you know, to your point, when you stand for something like that, there's going to be some opposition.
Yes.
There's going to be some people that
yeah.
do
the devil
not
doesn't like
what
you're
standing. Right. And he's going to try to throw arrows and use people sometimes,
Correct.
You know, to do that. So, but I'm glad that you've not backed down from that. Talk to me a little bit, because I love what you had said at one point. You said that Cape Town is like a womb. And literally, you guys went through a tremendous drought. And you can talk about that a little bit, but I think figuratively as well. You've talked about that as well, that there has been a spiritual drought.
Yes. Yeah, so I think the spiritual drought is throughout the world. I think we live in the last days of the last season, and we see God at work in a very different way. I believe that Cape Town is very significant for God. I believe that Cape Town is the mother city, and I believe it represents the womb. And I believe that the revival that everyone is talking about, and many prophecies has gone forward regarding revival coming to Cape Town, spreading throughout South Africa, Africa going around the world. I've seen in the spirit, I have seen the same. And funnily enough, I had that vision when I was in America in Lakeland at a revival. So I am 100% convinced that it will happen. The rain dried up
mm-hmm.
in Cape Town, and we ran into a situation where literally they were considering bringing part of an iceberg to Cape Town. They considered that, I mean, it's
as
so ridiculous.
Solution.
Yeah,
wow.
Well, when it was in the press, I thought, is this real or is this a joke? Is this the 1st of April? But they seriously considered it. So we ran out of water, literally. And it is weird, you know, when the financial crisis has hit America and it spread around the world, you see how people start to shake. They see how they buckle because they now think, where do they put their money? Their money is not safe, and that's their anchor. When your water dries up, it then becomes a serious situation. As you see, municipalities and government, they start to buckle under the pressure. And they ran out of plans as they ran out of water. And my spiritual father, Uncle Angus, so he has been hugely instrumental in raising men in South Africa over years now with the Mighty Men conferences. He filled stadiums with families, prayer days and prayer meetings. And subsequently, he called meetings called It's Time, where in Bloemfontein 2 years ago, there was 1 million people. And then he said, let's have an It's Time event. God is calling him to have an It's Time event in Cape Town, specifically to pray for rain. So you must appreciate, you know, when there is a serious drought and you go on a press conference and you address the pastors and the press in South Africa, and he made a statement and he said, God is not happy with Cape Town. And if my people, 2 Chronicles 7:14, you know. So he was calling on the people to come and humble themselves and turn from their wicked ways.
So and, God could heal the
and
land.
So that then God can heal their land so that the rain can come again. So it is in that context. And then the next day in the press, the headlines was that Angus Buchan says God is angry with Cape Town. So there was a huge backlash. So all of us, we were under tremendous pressure. And also the location of this event was in the heartland of the gangs that operate within the Western Cape, specifically in Cape Town, in a place called Mitchell's Plain. So we were expecting 500,000 people in this neighborhood that cannot even host 100,000 people or 50,000 people because it's not built for it. It's informal houses, the streets are narrow, and it's gang-ridden. It's a really dangerous area. So you would have to have people walking for a mile or two or three down these streets, among these houses, exposed to all the elements in the area. So from a logistical point of view, it was an impossibility. So we were facing a drought and a venue, which is like...
Not in the best location,
exactly.
Right?
It's not the Yankee Stadium. I looked at this and I said, only God can do this. So to cut a long story short, 20 minutes into the service, it started to rain. And 2 weeks later, the heavens opened. And that specific area got flooded. Ever since, the rain has come back. The dams are full, and it just goes to show that in the natural, there was this drought, and then in the supernatural, it will follow with the revival. And that rain represents the outpour of the Holy Spirit.
I love that. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Johan. So, Johan, I've heard of Uncle Angus for years. There is someone in our life that we just really respect and have come to love and respect, Dr. Richard Blackaby. He loves Uncle Angus.
Yeah.
And he tells Uncle Angus stories. So tell us a little bit, who is Uncle Angus?
So Uncle Angus, he originates from Zambia. So he lived with his family and a truck, and he came to South Africa. And he pitched his truck in a caravan in a place called KwaZulu-Natal, one of the 9 provinces of South Africa. He's a farmer. He's a simple man, married to Auntie Jill, which is an angel. And yeah, so he started to farm, and he started to farm with potatoes. And one Sunday he was in church, and God called him. He gave his heart to the Lord. And then that journey, that familiar journey of pruning, cutting away, that is what is not of the Lord. So he had that pruning done in his life, and God has come through for him also in the miraculous. There was one point in time where there was a fire on his farm, and the fire was about to destroy everything, and he just called out. He called out to God. And supernaturally, within a moment, out of nowhere, God has sent the rain out of nowhere. And that was just one of many, many testimonies that has built his faith. So, you know, he literally walks on water. I've not seen a man that walks on water like this in faith.
He is a simple man, though. I've seen pictures of Uncle Angus,
yes.
And it's always with the big straw hat. He's just a very simple man, but has the power of the Holy Spirit in him, for sure. And he went through some difficult things too, right?
Yeah.
Johann, I mean, that's, you look at people like that and you think, wow, a giant in the faith. But he went through some difficult things personally.
Yeah, he went through difficult times. You know, there was a movie made of his life, part of his life, called Faith Like Potatoes, where he planted potatoes against all odds. And that was his break. He had the harvest, just as supposed to, but supernaturally, and that's why it's called Faith Like Potatoes. So, and then also he, in a freak accident, you know, he had his brother's children and son got killed on the tractor while he was driving, and he had to bring that baby back home and said, your son got killed by this tractor today, and, you know, I was the one that was behind the wheel. So it was a very difficult, very difficult situation for him. I mean, you can imagine the guilt. But he has been called by God to raise men and to make men understand who they are in Christ and what position they should take up in their household, in their marriages, as husbands and fathers, but also as people called for a time such as this in a place such as South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I have seen this Mighty Men conferences grow from 6,000 to 60,000 to 120 to 400,000. 400,000.
Yes.
The last time we were together, it was 400,000.
I mean, men and women are important. I do believe, though, that, you know, I know our country was built on strong men and faith of strong men. I do believe it's foundational.
Yes.
I do believe it's foundational to have strong fathers, strong husbands, strong spiritual statesmen, you know, in the marketplace. It's critical. Well, thank you so much for sharing the story of Uncle Angus. I love that. You know, so Johann, I mean, you've gone through really difficult things yourself, right? As we all have. We all have a story, don't we, Johann? My story looks different from yours. You've gone through something really, really difficult. I've seen you, not that you ever forget, but I mean, you are stronger. I mean, you are, I look at you and I think, you know, you are a strong man of faith. And I know that the things that you've gone through have been difficult, but you are who you are today because of the things that you've gone through.
Yeah, I think we all go through difficult times. And just to put things a little bit in perspective, I think that I was a marginal Christian. I was brought up in the NG Church, which is the Dutch Reformed Church, which is very much a religious church. So, you know, you go to church, you tick the box, and, you know, a good citizen. I had no relationship with God. I didn't even know that that existed. You know, I think our fathers plays a very important role in terms of how we picture God, the Father, and the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take, there's a lot of take-home value that we take from our parents. I came to Christ in 2002, got baptized, and that's when also the pruning in my life started.
Mm-hmm.
So within a year, my relationship with my father deteriorated to the extent that I exited the business. So in 2004, we had no relationship towards the end of 2004. And in December of 2004, beginning of 2005, he was not physically, you know, he was not well, but we had no relationship. So I was literally out the business without a job. I walked out the door because I just could not conform with that what happened in the past. So then he passed away in March of 2005. And in June of 2005, my late wife got diagnosed with cancer at the age of 38. My youngest son was 3 at the time. My middle one was 7. My eldest was 9. This is my high school sweetheart. Met her when I was 15. She was 15. So it was tough. We were both 38, and here she was diagnosed with cancer. But the thing here which I want to mention is God was in the situation. So I never wore a wedding ring after we got married because it just irritated me. So I took it off my finger. And then before she went into hospital, she said to me, can she make me a wedding ring again? I said, yes. So she's asked a friend, a family friend of us, to make this ring because he was in the jewelry business. So unbeknown to me, he brought the ring to the hospital. And she was to give me the ring at some point during this time that she spent in hospital. So the day after the mastectomy, I came into the room. And she was dancing with a drip in hand.
Oh my goodness.
On gospel music. And I said, what are you doing outside the bed? She said, Jesus visited me last night and he married me. He came to take me as his bride. And I was astounded. And the ring that she'd made for me was gone. She couldn't find the ring. But that was to cement her journey of the next 8 years.
Right.
That was her confirmation of it's going to be okay.
Yes. What a beautiful story. I had not heard that story, Johan. So now you have me crying.
So,
I had not heard that.
I knew at the time, you know, this is serious, but God gave us grace.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us time.
Yes.
And what I've learned in that moment was I said to her, right, I understand. So we are now in the business of making memories. We're not going to let the children do sports. We will get them a personal trainer at the age of 13 when their bone structure is strong enough, and they will go into the gym, and we will make sure that their bodies get developed properly.
Mm-hmm.
But we're now going to make memories.
Yes.
Every moment, we're going to treasure, and we're going to take photographs, and we're going to live in the moment.
Yes.
We're going to smell, we're going to taste, we're going to do everything to live to the fullest every second of every day.
And you did that.
And that was the best decision I've taken, or we as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So Omri was in remission for 4 years, and then the cancer came back. So she was diagnosed again with stage 4 cancer, and then it had metastases to the bone. But before that, in 2008, I came to Lakeland to a revival, and my spirit was caught up in the heavens, and I saw things, and that's where I started to see visions. So God has showed me, before Omri got sick, He showed me a picture which I didn't understand at the time. But when the bone scan came and it showed up the cancerous areas, it was the exact picture that I saw in a vision before
right?
She got sick. So I knew that God is in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
He gave you those little glimpses along the way.
Exactly.
Confirm that.
So all in all, we were married for 23 years. We were together for 30 years. The last 2 years of our marriage, our time together, was the most difficult time because the cancer literally killed her every day. So in her body, she died every day, piece by piece. But in the spirit, she grew leaps and bounds.
Soared.
And our marriage got stronger and stronger and our relationship with God. We had communion every night. So it was an unbelievable time together.
Tell our listening audience, Johan, what you have said to me, that sometimes people can live for 90 years, but they haven't really lived. I can't remember. There is a famous quote that says, it's not the years in a life, it's the life in the years. And I see that that is what you guys, the decision you made, is that we are going to live every moment that she is still on this earth.
Look, Lisa, the thing here, when you are fighting for life, you have a fight for life or death on your hands. It is the weirdest thing that time does not exist because the sickness is so random. It can show up anytime. Anytime she would not feel well. And we had always two suitcases packed in the room. The one was for the hospital and the one was to go away. So we would wake up and say, how do you feel today?
Mm-hmm.
And she would say, I feel great. And we'd either go in the car and we're going to do something, or we'll just take the suitcases and go to the airport and just say, right, where are we going? And we'll just get on a plane.
Amazing.
And just go and do and live in the moment.
Yes.
Whether it's Monday or Sunday.
That's
whether
great
it's day
advice.
Or night.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get to do these things. And I think many times in my life, I've looked at my life and I look at the life of my friends. And I think compared to theirs, I've gone through so much in my life. I mean, there's so many things I've not told you. But it's been very, for me, it's been difficult. And then I get reminded about Job. Which is all, he also went through many trials and tribulations. And it was not that he was not a man of God. God recognized him. And he said to the devil, if you see my servant Job. So he was tempted beyond imagination. And God said, you cannot take his life. You can take everything except his life. And when Job died, it says, and Job died, and his life was full of years. So I think many times we live, but our year is empty. We go through a day, but our day is empty. You know, we had conversations, but it was empty conversations. We did things, but it was trivial. It had no eternal value. So I make it a point when I speak to people that it was a discussion, a significant discussion, you know.
Wow, there's just so much here. I have one other question for you, and then, you know, we could probably go on for hours and hours. We won't do that to our listeners today, though, Johan, but we may have to do a part two. When you come back to the States.
Andy.
Or maybe I should come to Cape Town.
Yes, open
invitation. I think that's a really great idea.
Yeah.
This is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs? And I know you can talk from your own experience, Johan, but what do you believe is that something extra?
I think if you look at the Old Testament, every king leader was called by God. They could not have done what they've done if it wasn't their relations for that relationship with God. God created us. Firstly, he spoke to himself and said, let us create man in our image, in our likeness. And he created us to have a relationship. So for me, I cannot be a leader. I cannot be a father if I don't have that personal relationship with Father. And we can have that because of the grace of God sending his son, dying on the cross, so that we can have eternal right. life. And our spirit man needs to connect to the Holy Spirit, back to Father through Jesus Christ, so that we can come into the throne room at any given time and consult with him and get his strategy for business, for family, for our lives. I have seen how God has given me strategy in a strike. You know, before the strike, we got to pray and God showed me, he said to me, plant a cross in every depot, but the Cape Town depot, you have to go and plant yourself. He showed me exactly where to plant a cross. And just before the strike, we took all the coaches out, and this is the first time since 1980 that place was empty. I turned around and there was nothing. There was no person in the place. There was no car. There was no trailer. There was no bus. There was nothing. The only thing that stood there was this massive cross in the middle of this property. And God said to me, everything is said and done, the cross remains. And I just looked at this cross and I said, God, what are you doing here? And so we had to operate from the remote areas because there was a strike. We got attacked as a company. We're not unionized. We're not part of the strike. So the other operators, they park their buses up, but we continue. Mm-hmm. So then the workers of other companies come and they attack our coaches
right.
because they're angry,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So I was standing there and there was violation of picketing rules and we took it to court. And after 3 days, we got the striking workers to be removed from our premises, outside the premises. On the third day, we had the coaches returning to that depot from various destinations in the city. And I stood there and I saw these rows of buses coming down the streets. And it was literally like blood in arteries coming back to the heart. And within half an hour, the whole place came alive again. So that place was in the grave for 3 days. The next year, there was another strike and I didn't hear God's voice. And I was in a plane on my way back to South Africa. I was sitting in London Heathrow in the plane. I got a picture. It was a Google picture and I saw the cross, but it wasn't the cross. It was the shadow of the cross. It was the day before the strike, the second strike in the industry. But this time around, didn't hear of God's voice. Then he came through and he said, you planted this cross in the natural, in obedience. And I was with you throughout the strike. This time around, I'm going to be with you, but I'm showing you in a shadow. I've planted the cross now for you because of your obedience. And I again will lead you through the strike. So if you take Google, it takes a picture from the top. So the picture was taken around 4 o'clock in the afternoon by Google, displaying this beautiful shadow of this cross in Cape Town. It was like this huge cross on the ground. Through his elements, through the sun and his creation, that he created that cross, the shadow. And that is how God speaks to you. So though you go through the valley of death, you know that he's with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Johan. This has just been a true pleasure. And like I said, we need to do part two.
Yes, we
will. I will come to you, though,
yes,
next
open
time.
Invitation.
All right. Thank you so much
You're
for
welcome,
being with
Lisa.
Us
Thank
today.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.